Yeah, it still just shocks me that my life ended up the way it was, because before I thought I was just gonna die like a fucking piece of shit in El Paso, like a nowhere place, you know? Nothing mattered there. And then the next thing I know, I'm living in LA and I'm sober for the first time and experiencing life for the first time and learning regular people things like how to cook and how to clean. How to talk to people without being fucked up. And I'm really grateful for that experience.
All right, Blanca.
Yeah.
Blanca, where are you from originally? Where'd you grow up?
I'm from El Paso, Texas.
Tell me about your family growing up.
All right. My dad is from Mexico and my mom's from Virginia. My dad grew up in Juarez, which is right across the border from El Paso. Growing up, when I was a child, I was given a lot of opportunity to be creative. I was homeschooled for a long time. I grew up Catholic. But when I started to hit puberty, my parents became extremely controlling. And I wasn't really allowed to go anywhere besides like homeschool and church. So I was about 18, which I think put a stunt on my social growth a lot. My mom didn't find out she was bipolar till she was in her late 30s to early 40s, which I think also took a toll on me. But when she found out, she never like started taking medication or anything. I'm also bipolar, but I take medication. I have a brother. I feel like me and him kind of kept each other sane in the family growing up. My mom is extremely paranoid and my dad's a control freak, so I feel like together they would just kind of create narratives, like make-believe lands that I was forced to live in, the rules of. And it took me a while to realize that that wasn't like normal or okay.
What kind of stuff was going on at home that made it tough for you?
Just a lot of paranoid delusions. Like if I were to walk past a parked car going for a walk with my parents, they would yell at me saying someone could jump out of the car and grab me and I shouldn't walk so close to cars. Just stuff like that, was pretty frequent. And I feel like it also put a toll on me where I've like developed paranoia. I have episodes where I go into psychosis, but I take medication for that now too, which helps a lot. Psychosis is really scary, but I think paranoia for me like leads to it. It's hard for me to tell the difference between like what's a delusion and what's normal to think, you know? And I think I developed that from the environment I was raised in.
That's interesting. What kind of teenager were you?
I was pretty well behaved because I was very afraid of my parents. And I also had a lot of profound love for them. So when I was growing up, I just really wanted to do what they were telling me to do, but it seemed like no matter how good I was still bad. Like I said, wasn't leaving the house besides school, home, and church since I became a teenager till I was 18. And I just really stuck with that. I literally waited till I was 18 to start doing drugs because I didn't want to get in trouble or caught and then it be something that my parents have to go to court for and shit like that, or the police drag me to my parents' house, like. But I was always treated as if I was doing all these bad things. I was always like treated like I was being a whore. I was always treated like I was doing drugs or on drugs, especially when my mental illness started to take effect and show a lot of signs. I remember I'd always get accused of being high,
But you weren't.
but I wasn't.
That's
Yeah.
it's interesting. That's a perfect example of how we create our worst fears. So your parents were horrified that you might become any of these things that they're calling you, and sure enough. The drugs took hold. Did sex work come into it as well?
Yeah, eventually I started stripping, and that was, I think, a side effect of my drug using and alcoholism, because I had reached a point where I couldn't keep a stable job because all I wanted to do was drink, and get high. And eventually, the only thing I was left with, the only resource, was a job where I can drink and get high at, and schedule myself, show up whenever I want, not show up whenever I want, not get fired, and make a lot of money quick as possible. I started stripping during COVID, actually, because I also just couldn't find a job during COVID, and I had an abusive roommate situation that I really needed to get out of, and I felt very stuck. So I'm actually very grateful for the opportunity to have turned to stripping, because it allowed me a lot of freedom and liberation, and I also had to hit a certain type of low that it let me hit to become the person I am today,
You've gotten clean from drugs. What drugs were you using?
I was using mostly cocaine. I dabbled with meth, but I was mostly an alcoholic. I loved to drink. Well, I loved to drink. I relapsed like a couple months ago, but once I drink, I'll do anything. Anything that's like put in front of me. But I was never really into downers. I like uppers. But I was sober for 2.5 years almost. I got sober when I moved to LA.
Why did you move here?
I moved here for love. I moved here when this punk band called Dead City Punks from LA toured to El Paso. They were supposed to play Austin, but last second they the show got canceled, so they were like, "Where in Texas should we play?" And everyone replied, "Don't go to El Paso, there's nothing there." So they were like, "Fuck it, let's see what's up in El Paso." And that day I was so fucking hungover. I was in bed, like, just sick. And my roommate, that's like a raver hippie, was like, "I'm having a really fucked up day. Are there any heavy music shows going on? I just want to like let out my rage, She's not typically into that kind of music, but I was like, "Yeah, there's this punk band from LA. If you want to go, I'll take you." And I'm like in bed, like shaking, just like, "Please say no." I felt like shit. And she was like, "Yeah, fuck it, let's go." So I got up, got ready. I came out of my room. She was like, "I'm so sorry, I'm gonna flake." I was like, "You know what? It's fine." So I just went by myself, and me and one of the band members of Dead City walked in at the same time. And when we made eye contact, I just felt like I had met this person before. Watched their set play. He came up to me after and was like, "What's there going on like after this?" We got to talking, and he told me like, "I have to train hop back to LA tonight." I was like, "Is that where your next show is?" He was like, "No, that's where I live. The tour ended." And I was like, "That's cool. I'm going to LA in 4 days on a road trip." And he was like, "Hit me up when you're there, And this is when the weird blizzards were going on around LA. We had plans to stay in LA for one night and then go camping, but when we got to LA, our camping reservations got canceled because of the blizzard, so we ended up staying with
There were
him.
blizzards in LA?
Well, around,
Okay.
like in the camping areas. It was like 2023 or something.
I don't recall that.
Yeah, it was strange. But our camping reservations got canceled because of the weather. So we ended up just staying at his house, and we fell in love pretty quickly. So he helped me move to LA, and it changed my life moving to LA. I got sober when I got out here. Doing the sex work, like I said, it benefited my life a lot. I got to save up money within like 5 months to afford to move out here and move here stable.
That was before you met him?
Yeah, I was doing sex work for a while before I met him, but when I met him, I had kind of just been making enough to get by. I worked like one day a week and spent the rest partying. But when I met him, I kind of put it into hyperdrive, started to make more money, hustle harder, do things that I don't necessarily want to talk about on camera, you know, but that's surviving, you know, and it brought me to a much better place. It brought me to a land of so much opportunity, and I got to start a band when I came out here that has been giving me a lot more opportunities as well, and making a lot of cool connections.
What's the name of your band?
The name of my band is People Infected by Greed. The acronym is PIG. Originally, I named the band PIG after my episodes with body dysmorphia. I just feel like I look like a pig sometimes. But we decided to put a meaning to the acronym. So it's People Infected by Greed.
What kind of music?
It's like hardcore punk. Yeah. It's super fun. I love it so much. Yeah, it still just shocks me that my life ended up the way it was, because before I thought I was just going to die like a fucking piece of shit in El Paso, like a nowhere place, you know? Nothing mattered there. And then the next thing I know, I'm living in LA and I'm sober for the first time and experiencing life for the first time and learning regular people things like how to cook and how to clean, how to talk to people without being fucked up. And I'm really grateful for that experience.
Yeah, see, LA gets a really bad reputation for being a place where people just go off the rails, but I think it can be the exact opposite as well.
Yeah.
It can be both.
It can definitely be both. I heeded a lot of warnings about LA eating people alive, you know, and that really scared me. And even throughout my using and shit, I never really depended on other people. Hence again, like the sex work, I always wanted to make sure that I had a place to live and that I was going to be okay. So I was very driven to make money to support myself with whatever means possible. And the same thing when I moved out here, I guess I kept that mentality. I flew some drugs to out of country when I first moved to LA to also make money to be able to stay here, because it's ridiculously expensive. You know, it was something I'd never experienced. My rent was $280 in El Paso. And I had a two-bedroom house at one point, and that was $600 a month. And then I move out here, and it's like the cheapest you
can
find.
10 times that.
Yeah. You know? And so, yeah, I flew the drugs, made it through. And then when I got sober, I started working for Amazon, and that was a very degrading experience. Like, if you think sex work is degrading, working for Amazon is fucking degrading. And I wanted to fucking die every day I had that job. But when me and my ex broke up, I went back to stripping because I got a tattoo apprenticeship, which I dropped out of when I relapsed.
What was it about the Amazon job that you hated?
Well, I was delivering packages, and I hated that I couldn't go home until I was done delivering the packages. There was no set schedule. And that drove me fucking crazy.
Well, the stripping allows you all the freedom in the world to do whatever you want.
Exactly.
Whereas a regular job, like the Amazon job, you have to do your job.
Yeah. You have to complete this fucking job. And it was,
you're clearly not a conformist. You're clearly not going to conform.
Yeah. I really didn't want to, you know, but love makes you brave, you know, I guess. And I just really didn't want to put this person that I cared about so much through worrying about me and also like the feeling of sharing me, I guess, because we were monogamous, which can complicate the sex work aspect for a lot of relationships,
sure can.
You know? Yeah, understandably so, to an extent. But yeah, I fucking hated that job so much. The solitude aspect of it, too, was kind of daunting.
You're by yourself?
Being by yourself in the van all day, in this tiny crammed van full of packages, and you're, like, trying to go as fast as you can, and you're, like, hitting your elbows and knuckles on everything, and then you have to, I was delivering packages in like Manhattan Beach area, and it was like these huge rich people's houses, and I'd have to like climb up these huge stairs to get to their front door for every single package, and it was just like, fuck, you know, like, why can't you go to the store? I don't know. Shit was driving me fucking crazy.
And living in El Paso was just depressing. You think that's why the drugs kind of took hold and other probably negative decisions you were making?
Yeah, definitely.
The options are really wide open here in L.A.
Yeah, they are. There's so much to do here. Yeah, the drugs and alcohol definitely took a huge toll living and growing up in El Paso, and I feel bad for a lot of my friends that sometimes I think they'll never get out of it. The recovery there is shit. Mm-hmm. I've gone to one AA meeting there, and it was like four people, and they were extremely old, and that was all I could find, you know?
Yeah.
It was just that one meeting, and I didn't like it, so I didn't go back, but AA is what got me sober out here.
When I moved to Los Angeles from Chicago in my 20s, it became really clear very quickly how LA can, your light can shine super bright here, or it can get snuffed out.
Yeah.
And you see plenty, like I interview a lot of people who have taken the wrong, made bad decisions
mm-hmm.
for different reasons. But it can also be a city where you can just be free to be yourself and do great things.
Yeah.
Be super creative.
Be super creative. There's an opportunity for every kind of person here. There are jobs that I hear about at the strip club that I couldn't even imagine were a job, you know? Just like really strange niche things. And I'm grateful for the privilege to be here. And I'm a little envious of people that got to grow up here because, I mean, I know it's a treacherous place to grow up too, you know? Like, I feel like I would have gotten into so much more trouble if I grew up here, but...
I think it's really an ideal situation to grow up somewhere else, like maybe El Paso or Chicago, mm-hmm. like I did, and mm-hmm. then come here.
Yeah.
Because I appreciate the weather here every single day.
Me too. Every time I'm outside, I'm just like, this is amazing. Like, because Chicago gets super cold, right?
Yes, it does.
Yeah, El Paso gets super fucking hot.
Yeah.
And the winters are colder than here, too, because it's the desert. It's just mm-hmm. the extremes.
And the attitudes are different here. And
yeah.
Just the creative environment is just wonderful.
It really is. I feel like sad for my, like, everyone I love in El Paso that I couldn't take with me, you know, because it's like a wonderland here, you know, with the music and my tattoo apprenticeship that I used to have and just knowing I could get another one and the artists that I get to meet and be friends with, it just feels like things I do actually matter out here. When I was doing the same things in El Paso and it was just like, cool, you know, good for you, happy for you. Like, you're making your little music and you're doing your little tattoos. But then out here, it's like I'm getting opportunities and meeting people and it's making like a huge impact on my life. But I do get what you're saying about it's probably ideal to come from a smaller place like that or a shittier
place. You appreciate it more.
You do appreciate it a lot more. And also, I like my small city attitude. I like my small city personality, you mm-hmm. know. I feel like the fashion out here is sick, but it's very repetitive. And I feel like in El Paso, my homies were super creative because we didn't have boutiques and like little stores you could go into and like buy your style. You had to make it, you know. Going to the thrift store, you know, picking up garbage on the side of the street and like sewing it onto your shit. Like, that's something that I admire a lot about my homies in El Paso. They're very DIY and creative because they, you know, you got to work with what you got.
How old are you now?
I'm 28.
28.
Mm-hmm.
You've been in love how many times?
I mean, after this recent one, I feel like, was I ever in love before, you know? I think four times in my life.
It's a lot.
Yeah. I'm a lover girl, unfortunately. It's a painful thing to be. And each time I was like, I'll never love again, you know? It's especially a painful thing to be one, as a woman that wants liberation, because I think it's hard to find a partner, a male partner, that truly wants that for me too. My dad was extremely controlling to my mom as well. They wanted to be like a 1950s couple. You know, he worked way too hard. She stayed at home and went crazy. And there just wasn't balance. And going forward, like, I didn't want that at all. But I also feel like it's very embedded in me to seek that at the same time. And I don't like it, you know? Like, it's hard to find a partner that sees what I do as just work, that understands, like, if it weren't for money, I would never talk to these people, you know? And that, like, actual cheating is, like, talking to someone because you're interested, you know? And that this is, like, quite the opposite. But the nudity, I guess, creates, like, the jealousy. But love and romance is a very important thing to me. I think it's like kind of one of my driving factors, or maybe like my biggest drug, honestly, my biggest drug of choice. I feel like the times that I've drank and used the heaviest in my life was when I was going through heartbreak, or when I was first falling in love and it was too intense to handle, I would drink heavier. Yeah, that one's big. The love thing. I guess I get obsessed.
Yeah, I think we all do.
Yeah. I get really obsessed. Which is unfortunate, because the obsession kind of actually prevents you from love, you know? It kind of is like a block. You can, like, love them a lot, but once you, like, lean into the obsession, it's like you don't treat them as good as you could. As good as you should.
You have to be brave. Mm-hmm. And maybe even a little reckless with love.
Yeah.
Because if you're going to play it safe and make sure you don't get hurt, you'll never find it.
That's super true. You have to be super brave, you know, and being brave feels like fear.
Well, that's exactly what it is.
Yeah.
It's facing that fear and just getting past it. And sometimes you have to be a little crazy and reckless, and then miracles can happen. But a miracle is never going to happen if you're careful.
Yeah, exactly.
And playing it safe.
Mm-hmm.
If everything has to make sense before you're going to risk getting hurt, you won't get hurt.
Mm-hmm.
And you won't fall in love either.
Yeah, exactly. You won't experience like the deepest, like truest altering love, you know? And like I said, it is kind of like love is a drug, and it changes the way music sounds. It changes the way streets look, you know? It changes the way you feel in your home. It changes the way food tastes. Like it really changes you. It's like it reminds me of like psychedelics, you know? You enter it one person, you come out the other. Psychedelics was actually how I walked away from Catholicism, because I grew up super God-fearing, but I was also very spiritual. I was very spiritually inclined, I still am. And when I first dropped acid, I was like, damn, this is just a story. And I had never looked at it like that before. It was very embedded in me to see it as truth. Like, I was raised being taught, if I masturbate, I'll go to hell. You know, premarital sex, you'll go to hell. Shit like that, tattoos, you'll go to hell.
What do your parents think of you now?
It's hard to say. I don't talk to them too often. But I feel like they half think I'm sick as fuck. And I feel like the other half is, like, always going to be concerned and perhaps disappointed.
It's like they love you, but they think you're crazy?
Yeah. And if I wasn't their kid, they would think I was cool. You know what I mean?
Mm.
But they're my parents, so it's like they have to worry. But once I got sober were the first times that they were, like, proud of me, like, truly proud of me. And could kind of stop worrying and, like, take a breath and just, like, appreciate me. And I built a relationship with my parents through the AA program. which was really, really nice. They don't know I relapsed. I don't tell them because it's like I don't want to burst their bubble, you know, and I plan to get sober again. I look forward to getting sober again. I just, they call it needing more experience when you go back out. Mm-hmm. You need to hit a different bottom, I guess, than before. But they say the program work destroys the enjoyment of a relapse, but I'm not finding that true for myself.
You're enjoying it?
Yeah, I'm enjoying it. Probably even more than before I got sober the first time, but I think it's because, I don't know, maybe it's cockiness, but I feel like because I've experienced sobriety and I know I can do it, I'm way less afraid of it. The first time when I was just out there using in like the darkness, never having gotten sober before, it was something I completely thought I could not do. You know, I thought I could not live without alcohol, but it was because I wasn't aware that with alcoholism, when you are so deep in it and you start being like, I can't go to my friend's house unless I'm drunk. I can't go to the grocery store unless I'm drunk. You start to believe that narrative, you know, but the truth is like you're just a raw nerve without it. There's a lot of chemical dependency that your brain goes through. And that's not normal life without alcohol. Like once you actually chill out on it, you build a tolerance to like anxiety in real life, you know, but you can't do that if you're always like self-medicating to kind of numb and blur through your experiences. I was a blackout drinker, so I would just forget everything. That was a huge reason I wanted to get sober too, is I just couldn't remember shit when I would drink.
So since you've relapsed, are you drinking a lot still or?
I'm drinking frequently, but I try to control drinking a lot. But I'm getting drunk, you know, I'm just not getting as drunk and I'm not going on benders. I try to have a lot of self-control, which I think I'm still very close to my ex. We're in a band together. And I think him caring about me and the relationship dynamic we have in his sobriety makes me not want to go overboard. There's like a restraint there that isn't from me, you know, which I think is like kind of part of the problem because I got sober originally for him. And they always say like the reason you get sober is the reason you'll relapse if it's not for yourself. So I think not letting myself go as hard as I would like because of another person is still a problem, even though it seems like a good thing. But
are you using anything other than alcohol?
Yeah.
Sometimes the other drugs you use kind of make the alcohol not such an issue.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because you're actually addicted to something else.
Yeah. You know, especially if it's something that wakes you up.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it I like to think makes me less reckless, you know, that it helps, it's actually better. But I'm just trying really hard to stay away from hard stuff, which is way more accessible here. You know, if I'm outside at night walking by myself, especially if I'm upset, people always pull up and ask me if I want to hit the pookie, you know, like almost every time without fail. And,
what part of town do you live in?
I live in Filipino Town.
Yeah. So that's right near Skid Row.
Mm-hmm. It's near MacArthur Park.
Yeah, either one.
Yeah.
It's in between the two.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. So it's interesting knowing how close it is. And there's a lot of things I haven't tried. And I'm a try anything once type of person, but that's not typically how it goes with harder drugs. You don't necessarily have the control.
As an outsider listening to your story, and I don't know your family at all, but it looks to me like your parents created what their worst fears were.
I think so. I remember growing up watching like Oprah on the TV and she would talk about this. Like the most controlling parents create the most rebellious kids and people that later have like sex, drug, love addictions. And I remember telling my parents one time, I heard Oprah say this, you know, because I wanted to be treated normal so badly. I wanted to be able to go play with my friends. I don't know. I wanted to be able to go to the mall or the movies, like what I thought was normal teenager shit. I didn't even want to do like bad things. You know, I grew up pretty innocent. My parents wanted to keep me a child. And they succeeded very well. But yeah, as soon as I turned 18, I just hit the ground running. Mm-hmm. And I just would do whatever came my way.
Yeah, it seems like my family, my parents were the exact opposite of yours.
Mm-hmm.
There was total freedom to do whatever I wanted, and they never asked what I'm doing or like what time I'm coming home or like any, none of that. Total freedom. And because I was given that freedom, I never had a temptation to do anything like drugs or drinking or anything.
Mm-hmm.
Other than things that would benefit my future, my life, my career, my whatever I was into. And it's like you walk a straight line so easily when you're given the freedom to do whatever the hell you want.
Mm-hmm.
At least for me.
Yeah.
Some people, maybe they've got the addiction gene and they, you know, that's a different story. But it's just interesting to hear your story where your parents were so restricting.
Yeah. I think it's definitely a contributing factor for all the parents out there. Like,
yeah, you have to figure out your kid because every kid is different.
Yeah.
So it's not like this one rule applies to all people, all kids. But
yeah,
for me, that freedom made me want to respect the freedom they were giving me and show them that I'm not going to be a screw up.
Mm-hmm. Like to not lose the freedom.
No, I'm not even worried about losing the freedom. They were going to give me the freedom anyway, even if I probably fucked up. But I just really valued the respect they gave me.
Mm,
and the freedom. Cool. It was like, wow, I can do anything I want.
Mm-hmm.
And I never want, like I saw my friends making really bad decisions and I just said, well, look where that's taking you.
Yeah.
I'm not going to do that. And yeah. I always made good decisions.
You had the like freedom and ability to make decisions for your own so you could like think for yourself and then more logic, I think, flows in.
The thinking for yourself is a super important part of life.
I think so, too, because to this day, like, I gaslight the fuck out of myself. You know what I mean? Like, I don't know how to make decisions. And it drives me crazy because I look up to people a lot that have strong confidence and self-esteem. I'm very deeply insecure. And and I think it stems mostly from my personality, even though I have issues with how I look, you know, as everyone does. But it's, yeah, my inability to make decisions, and I don't know how I feel. I feel like I hardly ever know how I feel. And that is very confusing, and I think it's because I wasn't allowed space to feel, you know?
Yeah, life's an interesting challenge that we have to keep.
Yeah.
Keep staying on track or keep pushing forward.
For sure. I feel like of all things, like AA taught me how to be a person. It taught me how to find my spirituality again without, you know, Jesus and all the Bible shit. And I'm super, super grateful for everyone that introduced me to it. I kind of feel like my life's purpose is served in AA communities. Like when I sponsor people, that's been some of the most beautiful experiences of my life, as well as being sponsored. Like when I got a sponsor, they passed down everything they had been through, their whole journey of getting sober and how painful it really is getting, it's really painful getting sober. Life just hits you so hard and you have to relearn everything again. And the lifestyle you have to live when you get sober is like the opposite of what you used to do. You know, it's like you can't go out at night. You start to go to bed early and wake up early because if not, like you feel like shit, you know, and sometimes you can't even listen to the same music, you know? And when she would share her stories with me and how hard it was for her, she was like on Skid Row for 13 years, you know? I would just think, like, if she can do the shit, I can, you know? And she taught me how to be a person for no reason, you know? Like, she just helped me, which was crazy to me. I didn't have to pay her. I didn't have to do anything for her. And then when I had walked through the steps and it was my turn, I've sponsored 3 people. 2 of them I got through the 12 steps. One of them I relapsed while I was sponsoring her, so I had to tell her, like, I can't keep sponsoring you. I'm sorry. But those were some of the most profound moments of my life, and I thought things I experienced on drugs were profound, and they were. They are. But that was some real-life shit, and I wish everybody could experience something like that because it's very tribal. You're passing down what you've been through, like the battles you've fought to like the younger generation, you know, or just like people less experienced, more mentally naive, I suppose. Because getting sober is an awakening. You're passing that down to like the lineage of who's coming next into the program, and then they do the same. And it just reminds me of, like, a long time ago, how people used to live, you know, like in tribes and villages, like they would pass their stories on of strength and teach the other generations, like, how to be a person, a full, well-developed person. And I feel like, at least for me with my parents, they wanted to be the perfect couple and the perfect parents so badly that they lost track of, like, being a human. And I don't blame them for it. You know, it's very easy to fall victim to living that type of way. But I think they wanted to portray themselves. Like, they would always tell me, we only had sex to reproduce, you know? So I felt like any of my urges beyond that was, like, super condemnable and not normal. And so, yeah, I didn't get much passed down to me. I didn't get a lot of stories of who they were before they had me. There wasn't a lot of three-dimensionality. And my dad just worked super hard, so I lived in the same house as him, but I didn't really get to know him. He was always just at work or sleeping.
What was your brother doing now?
My brother's addicted to video games. So he... What is he doing now?
I mean, how... I mean, is he doing fine? Is he struggling with life, or...?
He's struggling with life, and it makes me really sad. I think he's a little more lost than me. He's addicted to video games, so he is just always in, like, a fantasy world, pretty much. And I don't blame him, because he also wasn't very socially well-developed. But for me, like, I wanted to go out, and he just wanted to stay home and, like, dive further into, like, the video game world, so he never cared that my parents wouldn't let us outside, you know? But when he finally started to go out and, like, started to work, he met this girl, and they fell in love. And it was awesome because, you know, my brother, I've always seen him as, like, this dork, you know? I love him so much, and he's sick. He's, like, hilarious, but I always saw him as, like, you know, a video game nerd. And then he got this girlfriend, and they, like, super fell in love, and I was like, fuck yeah, like, he got a girlfriend, you know? They got engaged, and she was 26, and she died from breast cancer, like, a month before their wedding.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. So he moved back in with my parents, and he's with them now, still. So,
yeah. Do you have regrets in your life?
The only regret I think I have in my life, well, I have 2, not sneaking out of my parents' fucking house and being like, fuck you, like, I'm gonna go get my own life experience. And 2, how much time I've wasted on men and, like, chasing love and the idea of love, you know? I feel like that has always really controlled my life and led me down some really dark paths. And I really regret spending so much of that time doing that, you know, because I used to have older women warn me all the time, like, don't waste your 20s on boys. And I feel like I kind of did that. But at the same time, I learned a lot. I learned from every experience I have. So that's why I don't really have that many regrets. And even the way I was raised in my childhood, I feel it contributes to, I like to write poetry, and I feel like it contributes to my ability to sit and contemplate, because that's all I really got to do growing up. I didn't have a phone till I was 18. So I was just kind of alone with my thoughts a lot.
Your parents didn't let you have a phone?
Mm-mm.
Until 18?
No. I had like an iPod Touch, so I could...
No, that'd probably be great if the world did that, but...
I kind of think so.
You're one of the very few, right?
Yeah, I am one of the very few. And so I typically get along with older people more. But I like that, you know? Like, older people have stories and, like, character. And I feel like a lot of younger people, like, all assimilated into a similar personality because of the internet. But, yeah, like, I didn't have a phone until I was 18, so I would just sit and contemplate a lot, and I feel like it made me kind of creative, you know, and also like able to sit with my thoughts. Like when I'm at the strip club and there's just no customers, it's really dead right now. Like there's not really money in the clubs right now. Everyone will be like on their phones, and I just kind of sit and like look at the wall and like experience my thoughts, you know. I get overstimulated by my phone very easily, but I'm also really grateful to have one, because like it's fun sharing humor on such a broad spectrum. Like, have you seen that one meme? And then you can apply it to like your personal situation. Mm-hmm. I really, really love that aspect of it.
Let me ask you one last question, Blanca. Mm-hmm. What would you say is the most important lesson you've learned in your life?
The most important lesson I've learned in my life is that being of service to other people, helping other people, is the cure.
Yeah, it really is.
It's the only cure for like every pain and illness, mental illness that I suffer from, loneliness, self-dislike, heartbreak, whatever it is, like putting myself in a position to just help someone else, whatever that looks like. Even just washing a friend's dishes when I go over, because I notice like maybe they're depressed and they're not doing their dishes. Like it just gives me relief in a way that like no drug or man ever has or could.
That's wonderful.
Yeah.
All right. Blanca, thank you so much for sharing your story.
Yeah. Thank you for having me.
I wish you and your band lots of luck.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.